This month, The Spectator becomes the first magazine in history to print 10,000 issues, and we'd like to celebrate with you. Subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for just £12. Plus, we'll send you a bottle of commemorative Spectator gin, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/celebrate.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily, and sometimes more than daily, politics podcast. I'm John Connolly, and I'm joined today by Katie Balls and Kate Andrews. Today was a big day for HMRC and the government more generally, as their employee furlough scheme officially launched. The scheme will pay 80% of employees' wages who've been furloughed by the coronavirus. As of this morning, within the first 30 minutes of launching, 67,000 businesses had applied. By 4 p.m. today, that had risen to over 140,000, with the government now, or very soon, to be paying the wages of more than 1 million private sector employees. Kate, to start us off, do you think the government was maybe a bit taken by surprise by the size of this and maybe the amount that this scheme is going to cost?
Almost certainly. Their original projections for the furlough scheme were that roughly 10% of businesses would take it up, and that's absolutely skyrocketed. Now, they've never put a price tag on the furlough scheme, and they never said that a business couldn't apply. It is open to basically everyone. So, you know, they're willing to do it. The Chancellor has extended it to the end of June. So, you know, there's agreement between government and employers that they're going to pay this out, but the price tag on it's going to be astronomical, far bigger than I think was expected. The Chancellor obviously kicked off paying lip service to the latest measure to keep industry afloat. That was the £1.25 billion package to support high-growth startups who may not be able to access other schemes because of their status or the profit that they haven't turned yet. But obviously, John, as you pointed out, the big figures today were that 140,000 businesses who have applied to the furlough scheme, which will cover up to 80% of the salaries of over 1 million people so far, and the 12,000 loans that have been approved so far through the business loan scheme. Now, the Chancellor showed the cheery side of this, which was that it was double the number from a week ago, around 6,000. But as City EIM revealed in their long read this morning, the vast majority of businesses who are applying for this loan scheme are struggling to access it. They're facing harsh timelines, big levels of scrutiny, a lot of bureaucracy as they try to get this loan. So a lot of small businesses in particular won't see this 12,000 figure as impressive.
Katie, obviously this is going to be an astronomical amount. Do you get the sense of how long this can continue for, that the government can support this many employees?
Well, I think the furlough scheme is fascinating because, as Kate touches on, you look at the number of firms who are planning to take that up, and it does seem to go beyond the government prediction by quite some margin. But then when the Chancellor talks about it, or figures in government, they suggest that this means the scheme has been a great success. But the question is, how long does that go on for? Because what the scheme appears to be doing, like many of the Chancellor's measures, is ultimately hibernating the economy. So when you can bounce back, everything is in place. And the furlough scheme is trying to stop companies from making employees redundant. But I think there's a few potential flaws. As Kate says, anyone can apply to it. So we had reports over the weekend that Victoria Beckham was furloughing a large chunk of her staff, or a number of them. And Fanny said, well, this person is a multi-millionaire. Should they really be able to get taxpayer money to pay their staff's wages? Now, I'm sure the response by some businesses would be, well, this is available to every business of what, you know, it should be available to that person. But I do think it adds to this sense, which is, should there be limits on which companies are able to use this, is one thing, given that the bill for this is going to be so high. We expect it to run till now, to at least June. But at what point, and again, we get back to lockdown, which is, at what point is there going to be an exit strategy in place? Mm. Are we going to get to a point where the furlough scheme is only going to be available to certain sectors? If you think about the sectors that we expect to be probably the longest period in which they are going to find things difficult. And I think the third thing about the furlough scheme is there is a question in some cases, because some of the measures, in a way, they make it very easy for certain businesses to keep staff on. But if you are furloughed, you aren't able to work in any way. You're not allowed to work for that company. Now, that makes sense because the government is stepping in and you wouldn't want someone working and the government paying for them, not the company. But there is a question on whether this means that you are limiting in some ways, I suppose. Some businesses, for example, are adapting and transforming themselves, but this encourages you to simply put yourself on hold. So I think all those factors, the longer the lockdown goes on, might have to be assessed to potentially fine-tune the furlough scheme, because at the moment it is incredibly popular. The government is saying that's a successful thing and it is a sign that the scheme is working. You compare it to the loan scheme and it does seem that this scheme is something that's easy for businesses to use and is keeping lots of jobs in place. But the level of cost and I think the uncertainty as to when things return normal, for example, the restaurants, pubs, means that I'm interested to see whether you can actually keep this scheme in place up into the autumn if we believe current reports that we might not have lots of places, establishments open by then.
And Kate, do you think there's something to that in that perhaps the furlough scheme has created sort of incentives for businesses? I don't think anybody doesn't want to work in this situation, but encourage businesses to go to the furlough scheme rather than try and stay open and continue serving customers.
It's a difficult one because on one hand, we know that there will be some businesses who are taking up the furlough scheme that don't need to because there basically haven't been any conditions put on it. Well, I still think that business is going to come out as a whole very well after COVID-19 because we've seen so much adaption, so many efforts on the part of big business in particular, but also some small to change, creating Formula One cars to turning to ventilators. I think the sense that business was a part of this and in it and trying to tackle coronavirus will come across, but fingers will certainly be pointed at those who abuse the scheme. But I do think it's slightly more complicated than that, in the sense that regardless of how much money you have, if you are employing thousands or tens of thousands of people, it still may not be totally feasible to keep them on if they're not going to be working for an indefinite period of time. The airline industry would be a good example of that. Now, you can certainly debate whether or not they should still be paying dividends and giving shareholders a big chunk of money. But to say they shouldn't have any access to the furlough scheme simply because they're rich, I think really depends based on every individual situation. Katie is completely right that if this goes on into the autumn, at some point, the Treasury is going to have to acknowledge that this price tag is just totally gotten out of control. But it's going to be difficult. The Treasury's internal assessment of the impact of coronavirus was much more bleak than what the OBR published last week. They're estimating that up to 12 million people could be put out of work. And if you get rid of the furlough scheme too soon, if you roll it back too quickly, that could also result in people losing their jobs. So now that you've offered it, in many ways, it's difficult to roll it back that fast. So we are just looking at a price tag that we can't estimate right now. But as Katie says, it can't go on forever, and it's going to be about finding what that delicate balance is within the Treasury.
And moving on to that Treasury forecast, which is reported in the Times this morning, I think it was saying that unlike the UOBR, which is predicting more of a V-shaped recovery, the Treasury is expecting, well, we've had every letter, a U or a W, I think. Katie, do you get the sense that's more realistic, or that might be a bit of the government managing expectations?
Perhaps not good for a podcast where we say we're offering explanations and answers, but the truth is no one really knows right now. Ultimately, there are so many uncertainties surrounding coronavirus and how countries are going to adapt to it. It's very hard to know if you are going to get that V-shaped recovery, which lots of people hope we will, or something much worse. And I think that, again, it keeps going back to the exit strategy. It's not to say, and by saying that, I don't mean when are we getting out of lockdown? But in order to inform all these answers or to have accurate forecasts, which we know are tricky at the best of times to get right, you need to have a sense of at what point are people going back to work? At what point various sectors of industry opening up? And I think that while you have uncertainty over that, it's really hard to say how quickly things are going to move back. We keep hearing from governments across the world, the UK government doesn't really want to talk about an exit strategy right now, but the general sense you get both from UK politicians and also our European counterparts, if you look at them, is we are going to have to learn to live with coronavirus. And that means you are going to have some form of social distancing, potentially a quite a strict form of social distancing, in place for some time. And I think that until you know what that is, it's really hard to predict what that means for certain sectors.
And Kate, do you think that forecast perhaps give a bit more leverage to what we're calling lockdown hawks, those who want to lift the lockdown a bit earlier?
It's never been possible to separate the economic impact from the health impact of COVID-19, because we know that for all of the people who are losing their jobs, not able to go about their daily life, there is also a health impact to that. And it's not just mental health, although that is very serious. There are real consequences when supply chains shut down and when people can't go about their daily activity. I think that's always been on ministers' minds, but you do get to a point where you just can't fund any of the COVID measures if you don't have a functioning economy. And you put yourself in a position where, coming out of this, it is much, much harder to recover. I could not say whether or not the Treasury's internal assessment or the OBR's assessment or all of the other assessments are right or wrong at this point. But what is clear is that the few things that they all have in common is that they do think that once most of the lockdown measures are lifted, we will see some kind of boost to the economy. There's debate as to whether or not that will lag, how big it will be, but things will come back quite quickly and at a rapid pace. The other thing that they're all roughly predicting is that jobs won't come back as quickly as the economy does. So whether it's 2 million more jobs lost in the OBR's predictions or 12 million lost by the Treasury's predictions, both suggest that that's going to take longer to recover. And more people out of work means that it's harder for the economy to come back. It means that universal credit claims are higher. These are just additional costs, not just financial, but also human costs. So if we take what's similar in these assessments, because in many ways they're radically different, you see an economy that comes back, but it's changed, it's harder, it's a painful process, and there's serious collateral damage along the way.
And I think another factor in this is we get back to public opinion. Right now, public opinion and is that there is a large level of support for the lockdown and the lockdown measures. Now, in part because of all these government schemes, particularly the furlough scheme, even people who technically are unable to work are in large still receiving 80% of wages, and you're not necessarily feeling that hit yet on a large scale. I think that if these schemes cease to work in their current capacity, have to be drawn back to a degree, or businesses just decide that because there's no clarity on when things might be eased, they actually do just have to make some redundancies, I think that could start to lead to a shift in opinion. Because I think if we start to getting to the unemployment Kate was talking about as a potential outcome of this, I think that being stuck at home without a job is different to being stuck at home briefly with the sense that you're going back to your job in a month or so.
A major problem and concern that people don't want to talk about. The Chancellor hints at it when he says we can't save every job, we can't save every business. But you know, if you start talking about that a bit more blatantly, it means that people who are taking out these loans, people who are furloughing some of their employees, aren't going to be able to sustain themselves anyway on the other side of lockdown. Now, again, it doesn't mean that it's not the right thing to do. Giving somebody 80% of their salary for a few more months is better than not giving them anything at all, of course. But that pain on the other side, not every business that takes up a loan, not every job that's furloughed is coming back. And when we think about it from that perspective, gauging the lockdown and the public support for the lockdown, if people start to realize that their job might not be there in a few months' time, is going to matter a lot when it comes to the timeline of this exit strategy.
Thank you, Kate. Thank you, Katie. And thank you for listening.